This is Monsterland Ohio Radio, Episode 3, Special Edition, Remember D-Fest 21.
And I'm Mark Matsky. Special edition of Monsterland Ohio Radio means that we're going to stick to one topic. And tonight's topic is G-Fest 21. Thanks for joining us tonight. We are the official podcast of monsterlandohio.blogspot.com. Send us your comments, questions, concerns, and virtual rotten tomatoes.
We made up at
moradio@outlook.com.
If we don't get any letters by episode 6, we're going to start writing them to ourselves.
Yep. We've got a number of aliases already picked out.
Yep.
So you guys need to step up your game and send your thoughts to us. We'd love to have them and talk about them. All right, so G-Fest 21. This was our fifth G-Fest, going back now for that number of years. It's been a lot of fun, and we've gotten pretty involved in G-Fest. It's a place that really invites involvement, where you can get involved in many different ways, including artwork, model building, all the way up to filming your own tokusatsu special effects films and building your own costumes. Or, if you would prefer, just talking about the films and listening to people who have been in Godzilla films talk about their experiences, you can do that as well.
Okay, the first movie was, I just remembered what it was. It was King Kong. No, not the classic one. But it was awful remake. I'm sorry if you really like it, but...
Andy, tell us how you really feel about it.
Okay, how I really feel about it is the special effects are great. I really like the face articulation. Considering that's practically a robot, that's amazing. It's a robot man in a suit. It's a man in a suit with animatronics.
Yes.
I know that.
Are you sure about
yes.
that?
Yes. And then there's the scenes with the 50-foot-tall giant robot, which...
Yeah, fortunately, those are very brief.
Yeah.
But still completely noticeable.
It's kind of cool, because it's this giant thing. And
I think it was a great idea that didn't work out as well as the filmmakers hoped.
Didn't they do that for the original, too? Didn't they have a bigger Kong?
Yes, they did. In fact, there's a few, some of the close-up shots of Kong's face.
Yeah, it's that classic when you hear Anne scream and then it's the close-up.
Yeah, yeah. Let's back up just a second and talk to you about what Thursday is on the G-Fest schedule. It's a double-double feature at the Pickwick Theater in Park Ridge, Illinois. And the Pickwick Theater is really one of the old-school movie palaces where you walk in and it slopes, the whole walkway slopes downward towards the screen. And you look up, and when you sit down, you look up, and it's just one of the grand old movie palaces with a lot of old artwork on the ceiling and sort of an orchestra pit down in front. It's a really cool place.
Something we didn't get to play this year, because we just really didn't have time, in between the movies, is find the picture on the wall. You strain your neck and go, I spy a fish, and then the other person has to look. Yeah. That's kind of fun.
There's all kinds of stuff up there on the ceiling, isn't there? And Pickwick has had a couple upgrades over the years that we've been going. One is that they installed kind of reclining modern movie
seats. Oh, those are so
seats.
Comfortable.
Yes, they are very. They're almost too comfortable after a long G-Fest day, and you sit down for one of those movies. A nap is almost inevitable. But the other thing that they did is they installed a Blu-ray projection, which really is quite noticeable in the movies that we see. One of those we'll be talking about today. So I just wanted to set the stage there a little bit so that people knew where we are watching these movies. It's not just in a convention ballroom somewhere, but it's on a real movie theater screen in a really cool setting.
Mm-hmm. And that place is a great movie theater. It's probably my favorite movie theater that I've been to, if that makes sense. And continuing on the King Kong thing, the movies, that movie really was a good Kong movie by itself. If that makes sense. Like, it's not, doesn't, if you call it a remake, it's awful. If you call it, like, making its own of the King Kong genre, it's a really good movie. And then, that's my thoughts without getting into super detail.
Right.
Tell me your thoughts.
Well, my thoughts are that King Kong 76 is very much of its era, which is to say the 1970s. And in my opinion, you know, there's sort of a cynical edge to this movie. There's humor, certainly, but it's all sort of got this hardened edge to it. And it's really not my favorite giant monster film, to be honest. I do respect the effects work. And a funny story about the movie is that when I was very small, I was all excited to see this movie with my dad. And at the very last minute we were at the movie theater, I chickened out and I would not go in. And my dad ended up watching it. I think my mom must have come and gotten me or something. But my dad went in and watched the movie, and I was so excited and so hyped up going into seeing it. And I don't know why I freaked out, but I freaked out. And I ended up not seeing it in the theater. And looking back now, I don't regret it. It's not that great a film. But there's, you know, it has some historical significance to it. I can say that now.
It's a historical, in the historical road, it's a bump in the road. It's the little ditch go through. Whoa, what was that?
Right. Which then begs the question, if that's a bump in the road, what is King Kong Lives?
Jinx, you owe me a soda.
I do.
And okay, are we going to King Kong Lives? Do we have to go
that
to
was
King
the
Kong
transition
Lives?
Point. I set it up for you. Put it right on the tee.
If I made King Kong 76 sound bad, I'm not even going into a slight description of King Kong Lives. Let's just do a synopsis. Did I say the word correctly?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, I did. And King Kong's not alone. There's another Kong. Yada, yada, yada.
Let's put it this way. King Kong Lives begins with an open-heart surgery, and the open-heart surgery is taking place on King Kong.
And the really fun thing about that is it could be very gory. They do have kind of some blood squirting out, but it's kind of such a... they used all their money on the special effects, and then they shot the plot, practically, is that you don't even get to see truly the surgery take place. You hear... and then you see the heart get pulled out in this weird fake heart that really doesn't make sense at all. King Kong Lives, ladies and gentlemen.
Here's what I will say about King Kong Lives. It is prime riffable material, and I'm hoping that somehow, some way, Riff Trax will get their hands on it because it would be perfect. So, King Kong Lives.
Not suitable for young children.
No. No, I would not recommend it for young children.
I would not recommend it for kids my age, too.
I would not recommend it for thinking persons,
actually. I would not recommend it for anybody. Even for a person who's never seen a movie in their life, I would not recommend
it. Even my enemy, who I hate, I would not want them to watch it.
Yeah, it's so sad.
All right, so.
It gives an opportunity to be a really great movie, and it completely stinks.
It's just so riffable.
Using nice words.
It is so riffable. All right. So then the next movie following the dinner time break was Gamera versus Baragon.
That movie is fun. It's a really interesting movie that if you think, oh, I've seen the MST3K version. I've seen it. No, you haven't. They cut out about 45 minutes. You don't get anything about fake rain. What is that? And you don't get anything really on how they defeat Baragon, except Project Review Mirror, was that?
Something like that.
Yeah. And to say when you said the Blu-ray, that's completely true. You can tell because that was so clean. That movie was amazing.
Yeah, the version that we saw was absolutely crystal clear to the point where many of the special effects were revealed as far as wire work and things like that. And that's sort of the downfall of the crystal clear images quality that we get today, is that it really does show a lot of the things that otherwise you probably wouldn't see in a lower
resolution.
Thank you, sir.
Thing. And that's kind of the same with stop motion movies nowadays. You kind of see that it's on a base. And when I say that is we're watching Seventh Voyage of Sinbad while we're recording this on mute. So that was the end of Thursday night for us.
Yeah, we ducked out.
For young Gary, we were so tired. And we had to help your dad and mom, my grandparents. Mm-hmm. Getting into their room.
Yeah, it was super cool. We had my mom and dad, the aforementioned parents of mine, in attendance for the second time at G-Fest. And that's always really a special thing. None the least of which, reason for that is that my dad pretty much got me into giant monster movies in the first place, taking me to see movies like Godzilla versus the Cosmic Monster, Godzilla on Monster Island, the original Star Wars in the theater, sharing that love of cinematic magic with me.
That's amazing. I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, and just to hear, I saw the original Star Wars in the theater. Just like, amazing.
Yeah, there's a story behind that, too.
You guys sat in the front row.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one-sentence version, is we sat in the front row by necessity, and for everyone who's seen that movie, you know how that opens with the Star Destroyer pursuing the little Rebel shuttle and just, you know, mind blown at that point.
And I have to say something about Gamera versus Baragon that I forgot, is that that's the one movie in the whole series of Showa Gamera movies that a kid does not solve the way to defeat the monster.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah, and after that point, it totally goes in the direction of the kid who knows everything and the children who get to ride on Gamera's back and Gamera, stuff like that.
Señorita Gamera.
So Thursday night into Friday morning of G-Fest is kind of a fun time because you are reuniting with people who you see mostly at G-Fest, except it can be in other places as well. And so one of the things that we did this year is we made sure to support G-Fans Helping G-Fans, which is a neat little element of this particular convention. There's a fundraising effort to help out families within the G-Fandom community who need a little extra help for medical reasons and so forth. So we brought a Jack's Pacific 2014 Godzilla that would be raffled off and raise some money. So we went in and saw our buddy Dave Nunez, who runs G-Fans Helping G-Fans and is in charge of the dealer's room. And we
have a picture of him tearing into the, because we had to wrap it.
Yeah.
And is that on Monsterland Ohio?
It's not on there yet, but it will be posted on one of our recaps that is added intermittently. Now, one of the things that I ended up doing is hooking up with my buddy, Dr. AC, also known as Aaron Christensen, the author of Hidden Horror and other fine written materials. And we sat in on a session that's hosted by Mark Jaramillo, and it's kind of lost films or films that people have heard about but rarely seen outside of Japan. Fan-made films, but when I say fan-made films, I mean pretty professionally made fan-made films, such as Godzilla versus Wolfman. That is just a mind-blowing fan film that dates back to Godzilla versus King Kong, or King Kong versus Godzilla.
I don't know what I was doing. I was doing something else. Probably with grandparents.
Yeah. And then the big moment of Friday is the opening of the dealer's room. And we are fortunate to be able to get into the dealer's room a half hour early because my wife, Sue, very kindly gives of her time volunteering at G-Fest. And there's a lot of volunteer opportunities that are there. And her work enables us then to get into the dealer's room a very valuable half hour beforehand.
Mm-hmm. I usually speed walk around the dealer's room seeing what everybody has during that time.
The dealer's room, just to paint a quick mental picture for you, is the ultimate toy store for a Godzilla fan. There are action figures, play sets, posters, t-shirts, soundtracks, and much, much more, all of it pertaining to Japanese fantasy and science fiction, and there simply is not anything like it anywhere else in North America. It's like Christmas morning.
In our house.
Times a million, yeah.
In our house times a million, yeah.
So what was your favorite acquisition this year from the G-Fest dealer's room?
One of them sitting, even though people listening can't hear it.
You can't hear it?
They can't see it, is the GMK Baragon vinyl figure in the regular colors. We have it in a... Is it red? Yeah, red color.
What do you mean? Godzilla isn't red.
In like a solid red. Oh, that constantly goes on at the dinner table.
Yeah.
Like us making quotes.
Yep. And I'll just say that my favorite pickup from the dealer's room is thanks to Linda Conrad, also known as Goji Girl and Chibi Goji Toys. I had sent her a Facebook message earlier in the year asking her to look for a Woo for me. Woo is a giant snowman / Yeti that lives in the Japanese Alps that appears on the original Ultraman series. And finding those figures is not an easy task. But I put it out there for Goji Girl. Would you please look for a Woo for me? And sure enough, I went to her table and I saw standing on the table behind her display table a little Woo. And so I went and asked her if that was mine. And sure enough, that was the one she had found for me. So once again, I am indebted to Goji Girl for her kindness and diligence in hunting down Kaiju vinyl for me. Year after year, there's something called Jeopardy, which is Jeopardy when all the topics are Godzilla. And we sat in on some of the opening rounds of Jeopardy, watching people answer these insane, arcane, you know, just the most trivial of trivial answers. And they get them right. It's truly astounding. It's also very humbling because I think I know something about Godzilla, but these people who win Jeopardy know everything about Godzilla. So it pretty much puts me in my place. Mm-hmm. Although I will say,
we know more in different subjects.
Possibly.
We do.
But I was this close.
This is your index finger straight out and your thumb right next to it close to
being actually a contestant on Jeopardy. There's a little written quiz that's sort of a kind of a filter to see if you really know your stuff. And I tied with two other contestants. And the way that they determined who's going to be on the stage was rock, paper, scissors. And I lost.
Oh, well.
So I could have been a contender, but I wasn't. That's all right. No problem there. So what ends up happening then Friday night is the introduction of the special guests. And this year, the special guests were the main actor and actress from Terror of Mechagodzilla. And also we had Hiroshi Sagai, who we've talked about in a previous episode. Robert Scott Field was on hand, and he's become more than just a special guest. He's been a kind of a special friend to G-fans, not to mention the fact that he serves as the translator for the special guests, which is necessary in order to understand what they're saying. Now, one of the special, really special things for me this year at G-Fest was the opportunity to meet and hang out with Mike Bogue. And some of you may know who Mike Bogue is. He is a prolific writer who has been submitting articles to GFAN for, I think, over a decade, at least. He also writes for Scary Monsters magazine. And he's an all-around great guy. Well, I had the opportunity to talk with him and another amazing scribe in the GFAN community named Alan Debus. And Alan, Mike, and I prepared for our panel, which was held on Saturday, called Atom Age Connections, by hanging out Friday night and talking about some of the issues that we're going to raise in our panel. And it was just sort of a surreal moment for me to be sitting there at a table with Mike and Alan, and here's these, you know, unbelievably good, solid, excellent authors. And then there's me, and just trying to kind of keep up in the conversation with those guys and not look like an idiot was what a large chunk of my Friday night was consumed with. And it was just incredibly fun. So Mike and Alan, thank you for allowing me to have that experience.
Yeah, let's talk about Saturday now. And we did something. Well, I shouldn't say we, I should say you did something very important on Saturday in the morning.
That's right. This is the third year?
Yeah.
Yeah, third year that I've organized the G-Fest Kids Thread. And the word thread is sort of convention parlance for a series of presentations. And another way of talking about it is this is G-Fest Junior. This is G-Fest for kids. We provide a variety of opportunities to learn about Godzilla and get your hands on Godzilla by doing artwork and so forth. And it's just a lot of fun. It's allowed me to get to know some people a lot better in the G-Fan community. And so I'd just like to talk a little bit about each one of those real quickly.
That was really fun to sit in on you doing, leading, sitting behind a computer and helping the main presenters, because with the their PowerPoint presentations, that was just really fun to see you leading
something. Oh, well, thank you. It's a total blast. G-Fest is totally a convention where if there's something that you want to try or launch or lead yourself, you can have that opportunity. I wrote J.D. Lees, who is the publisher of G-Fan Magazine and the head honcho of G-Fest. I sent him an email saying, you know, it would be really cool to have programming directed right at children because there's so many kids at G-Fest more and more. And so he sent me an email back that said, yeah, that is a good idea. Why don't you try it? And that's sort of the thing that happens at G-Fest. If you see something that you think would be cool to do, you probably can end up doing it if you so desire. And so we had Tom Tvardik showing kids how to draw various Godzillas, you know, down through the years, the various suits. And he did three in particular, supplied all the paper and pencils and pens. That was awesome of him. Thank you, Tom. We had Baron Christopher talking about American Godzilla toys, which was cool. The kids got super excited during his presentation, as you could imagine. And we capped that off with a giveaway of some of the American Bandai Godzilla toys, generously provided by Tim Bean. So thank you, Baron and Tim, for making that really memorable for the kids who were there. Then we had J.D. Lees. He did a whole comparison of the sizes of kaiju, which was really cool, and had a PowerPoint presentation along with that, that a little behind-the-scenes tidbit I helped salvage by doing some computer work, sending files back and forth. But the fact that JD agrees to do this every year means an awful lot to me. To me, it sort of legitimizes the entire kids thread, so I'm really thrilled to have him participate. And then it was Monster Island Storytime, where my wife, Sue, former children's librarian, reads the classics such as Godzilla Likes to Roar. And she really had a good group of kids this year, some of whom have grown up with those stories and pretty much knew what was on the next page and, yeah, and what the actual words were. Then Allison and Danielle Fay did building costumes with stuff that you find around your house. And Danielle brought out her awesome Muto costume that she made and let the kids try on and gave them tips and ideas on how to build costumes at home with stuff that you would find lying around. So we found that pretty interesting because we tend to do that anyway on our own. So Danielle and Allison, once again, thank you very, very much. Then I was last. I had two presentations. One is all Godzilla's movies in 30 minutes, which is quite a challenge when you've got a room full of kids trying to tell you facts that they know. And I really don't have time to stop when I'm trying to cover all those movies in a half hour, but it's still pretty fun. And then we have the thing that I've really come to enjoy the most, which is the Kaiju Kids Quiz Show. And it's just a PowerPoint quiz show that I put together. This year we had some pretty awesome prizes, if I do say so myself, including exclusive G-Fest Kaiju Kids shirt that I had made up through Vistaprint, in addition to a bunch of other cool giveaways, toys, and so forth. And it's just great to see kids get really excited about earning a toy by answering the right question or wearing their t-shirts around G-Fest for the rest of the weekend. That was really super awesome.
How many of the t-shirts were made?
There were 17 shirts, or maybe 18. There were 15 available for the quiz show. Two of them, which makes 17, I guess, were auctioned off as part of the raffle for G-Fans Helping G-Fans. And then that leaves one that was given to someone who, let's see, who's that kid again? Oh, yeah. It's you. Yes, it's you. Well, right after that was my panel with Mike Bogue and Alan Debus. It was, again, Atom Age Connections, and what we talked about was the essential difference between the way American sci-fi of the 1950s dealt with radiation and the threat of atomic warfare, nuclear warfare, and the way that Japanese movies dealt with it. And as you would expect, they are entirely different in approach. And so we really explored that using a number of films. One comparison was the original Godzilla and the Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, and some other maybe less well-known Japanese and American films, but it was just really, really interesting, and I was thrilled that Mike asked me to participate. I tried to hold up my end of the bargain, but between Mike and Alan, those guys are just storehouses of knowledge, so I sort of earned my keep by running the computer and making sure we could get into some YouTube clips and so forth, which... That, too, is kind of a joke. I mean, I'm no technical wizard, so I was crossing my fingers the whole time, but everything worked out really well, and it was really an honor for me to be on the podium with the two of them, and I thought it was pretty interesting. We probably could have talked for another hour about all of the issues at hand. We had really good audience participation as well. Mm-hmm.
And the really fun thing in between American and Japanese is the Japanese were looking, because they had felt it, that the bomb is a weapon. It could kill the world. Americans are just like, we're firing off bombs, whee! And that was sad, but relatively true. Because we're testing them, not even knowing what they would do. Like, the first atomic bomb, they didn't know if it would work or if it would blow up the whole state of New Mexico. Oh, let's just try.
Yeah, let's see what happens. What's the worst that could happen?
You could completely die, maybe melt the world.
Yeah.
No, let's try.
We'll just be annihilated. Boop. Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, you put your finger on it. That is an essential difference, is in all these American films, the vast, vast majority of them take a pretty cavalier attitude towards testing and radiation and so forth, and all you have to do is watch the original Godzilla to see there's a very, very different tone when it comes to the nuclear threat and radiation. And it has everything to do with what has uniquely and exclusively happened to Japan. And it's understandable. Also, obviously, food for thought and conversation. One of the huge drawing cards of G-Fest 21 is something that's never happened before and may never happen again, and that is a live concert featuring the music of Akira Ifukube, who is a treasured and storied Japanese composer who came up with the musical themes for Godzilla and so many of the other Toho giant monsters. In fact, in many ways, his music is synonymous with Godzilla and Toho special effects films.
His many credits include Godzilla, Seven Samurai. He didn't do Seven Samurai?
No.
I thought he did.
No.
See, let him do this. He knows all about it. I thought in that one CD you got a Seven Samurai.
No, that's Akira Kurosawa's movies and the soundtracks. No, it's okay. The thing that's interesting is that Masaru Sato, who did Godzilla films such as Godzilla Raids Again, and then later ones like Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla, did score some of Kurosawa's films. And in fact, he may have done Seven Samurai, although I'm not sure about that. But
this is fun. This is our regular conversations. We're just, I'm talking, he's like, no, I'm like, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah. So here it is. The concert featured a suite of music from every Ifukube Godzilla film, put on by a full orchestra, directed by John DeSantis, and organized by Chris Olio, two awesome G-fans and friends of the community, fans themselves, and Eric Hominick, who is the curator of the American official Akira Ifukube website, was also on hand as the MC. It was a once-in-a-lifetime, absolutely, supremely special event to be a part of.
That was amazing. That's all I can say. I can't really put it into words. It's just amazing to see them make the music.
It was thrilling. It was, without a doubt, my favorite concert experience in my life. It was moving. It was exciting. When they played these themes that you've heard on movies for so long, in many cases on a non-stereo track, you know, probably scratchy and buried in the mix, to hear that music coming alive through, you know, professional musicians and live instrumentation, it was glorious. It was wonderful. It just washed over you, and it brought all these images into your mind of the various films. It was like the films were playing in your head while this music was just washing over the audience. And I think everybody who was there would say the same thing. Not a dry eye in the house, really. It was just, it was exceptional. So special thanks to John and Chris for putting that on. Part of me hopes that we can do something like that again, and part of me hopes that something like that never happens again, so that we can say the one time that it ever happened, we were there. That was awesome.
Completely. Moving on to Sunday, I went to the Japan update. Robert Scott Field is a really big part in that now, after the tsunami.
I had a really unique experience on Sunday morning in that J.D. Lees asked me on Saturday if I could help out with some illustrations using my computer at the session entitled Even Though You're a Cyborg, which was the interview with Katsuhiko Sasaki and Tomoko Ai, who played Ichinose and Katsura in Terror of Mechagodzilla. So I had the opportunity to set up some image files for JD and put my computer up there on on the level where they were doing the interview, and I even added a little bit of an introductory panel for them. So that was really awesome, and got to be a little teeny weeny piece of the action as part of that interview, which was a really fascinating interview because what they really got into was their relationship in the film. They become love interest to each other. And the thing that makes that a little bit strange is that Tomoko Ai's character, Katsura, is a cyborg. And so, you know, there's some complications with that, as you might imagine. But where they went in the interview is, what did you feel about each other in real life? And that's where it really got interesting. And they really played up that angle of it. And they were both really good sports about the whole topic.
And tell the funny thing about who's the guy? I don't know their names.
Let's just say Ichinose.
Yeah, Ichinose. Tell the funny thing that happened, truly, when they got, how'd you like each other during the movie?
Well, what came out in the line of conversation is that he was a newlywed at the time when he took that role, and so he really kind of kept his distance on purpose from her because he knew that his new wife might get a little bit jealous of any extra attention that he might be paying to her. So it was really cute the way they played up that angle of it, and they had a really fun time.
Continuing on Sunday.
Well, what happens every Sunday around noon or so is it's time for the awards luncheon. And the awards that are given out at the luncheon are awards for model contest winners and things like that. Also, the Mangled Skyscraper Award is given every year, which is given to a special friend of the convention, somebody that we want to recognize as being awesome. And in the past, it's been given to such luminaries as Akira Takarada and Bin Furuya. And this year it was given to Bob Eggleton, who is an awesome illustrator. Chances are, whether or not you realize it, you've seen Bob Eggleton's artwork because he is pretty much heralded as the master of Godzilla portraits. And
He really is.
He is. There's no doubt about it. He's done everything from the kids' books to t-shirts to magazine covers. Also, I was somewhat stunned to be named and thanked at the awards luncheon as part of the convention crew. That was not expected, but it meant a lot to be recognized by the folks at G-Fest for playing a little part in the proceedings. So that was kind of a neat moment for me as well.
I was proud of you.
Oh, thank you.
I'm always proud of you.
I'm proud of you too.
Oh, thank
we're having our little moment here.
Oh.
Group hug. I'll give you a Godzilla and Minya snowfall hug.
Oh.
And then it starts to get really rough because G-Fest is kind of coasting to its close. And there's a couple things that traditionally happen. One is that J.D. Lees has what he calls his annual accountability session, meaning that he takes questions about G-Fan and G-Fest. And I love to go to that because I just think JD is a cool dude and I like to hear him talk about stuff and get his thoughts on the magazine and sort of get a read on if he's enjoying doing it still and things like that. And this year they talked a little bit about G Tour 3, which is frankly out of our price range but would be awesome. And then the most bittersweet experience of all of G-Fest, which we have referenced on an earlier episode, and that is Kaiju Confessions. It's okay.
I don't want to talk about
it. It's going to be fine. Stan Hyde, who is really a major player and contributor to G-Fest, hosts a Kaiju sing-along where he takes clips from lots of Godzilla movies, also Mystery Science Theater 3000 and other sources, and it's a sing-along. You sing the King Caesar song. You sing The Words Get Stuck in My Throat from War of the Gargantuas.
Do, 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 do,
And nobody cares. Everybody is into it. You cannot possibly make a fool of yourself at Kaiju Confessions because everyone's making a fool of themselves and loving every minute of it. And it's totally the type of thing that you either get it or you don't, and you never will. And we get it. We feel
bad for you people that don't get it.
Yeah, we do feel a little bit sorry.
Save the Earth.
Save the Earth.
Save the Earth. Time is running out.
It's awesome. It's a celebration. It's also a sort of a beginning of the end, which is pretty sad. But
no giant grasshoppers appear.
That was very good. Very good. I'm proud of you. That's sort of the unofficial theme of our G-Fest remembrance is the pride that we have in one another. Then there's the Dead Dogzilla party, which is just basically
crazy.
Everybody hanging out after the fact. Joking. It's a lot of fun.
Photobombing pictures.
Yep. We went out to have pizza at Giordano's with Dr. AC. Got rained on. Came inside.
That's actually kind of fun.
It was fun. It's very memorable. He's a great guy. And we do hope to get Aaron on a future episode of Monsterland Ohio Radio. So look for that to happen. But we kind of made our said our goodbyes to some of our good pals. And see you next year, that type of thing. And it really is a, you know, first year you go to G-Fest, it's for Godzilla.
The second year, it's a family reunion, a little, and Godzilla half-half. And then it creeps more and more to family reunion.
Yeah. Yep, so we feel really, really fortunate and really blessed to have made a lot of great friends and acquaintances through G-Fest. And if you're listening to this program, chances are you're one of those people. So thank you for listening. Keep circulating the tapes.
Write us a review on iTunes.
Yeah, rate and review us on iTunes. That would be sweet.
That would be awesome.
Yes, it would.
Awesomely sweet. Like a popsicle on a hot day.